Hi, this is Maury Moreland Morrison, here to tell you GEICO has more than just great savings. Much more. GEICO's been around for more than 75 years, back when they were using Morse code. Sorry, that's just my sense of humor. What's more, with GEICO, you get 24/7 access to licensed agents on the app, online, or over the phone, so you can talk to them at night or in the morning. So forevermore, just know that no other auto insurer has more than GEICO. More power to you. GEICO. Expect great savings and a whole lot more.
It hasn't been raining in the last couple of months, but it's time for the change in the season. Here come up these clouds.
Damn, Byron, back at it again with the folded arms. Yeah, so that's me trying to be cool and show you guys that I'm still hip and in with the new trend. So, damn, Daniel, if anybody doesn't know what that is that still a fad? Is that still going on? Whatever the case, welcome to the Lakers Legacy Podcast. I'm your host, Jonathan Hernandez. We are once again going to be having a drive-in podcast where I'm going to call Tommy on his drive home from work because we don't have time and we're going to do things that way. But before we get started, I'd like to please point you to our Twitter where you can follow us at Lakers Legacy Pod, that is at Lakers Legacy Pod, where you can, you know, throw us questions. I'll talk, you know, I like to have discussions there, and sometimes we'll post some of your questions on the podcast as well. Also, please rate and review us on iTunes. You know, I want to thank a lot of the people over the last week or so who have rated and reviewed. It's been great reading your guys' reviews and just getting some feedback on how we're doing. And so far, the response has been very positive, and I just want to thank all those people who have done that. So please rate and review us 5 stars. You know, the more you rate and review, the more new sets Byron Scott will implement into the offense to get D'Angelo and Clarkson and Randall going. Is that a good thing or is that a bad thing? I don't know. We'll actually get into it a little bit more later about the new sets. But yeah, rate and review. You'll see better Lakers basketball, hopefully. So with all that said, I'll cut the chit-chat. Chit-chat. Chitty-chitty chat-chat. Chat-chat-chat. That's from Kung Fu Panda 3, if you don't know. If you haven't watched it yet, please watch it. It's better than Zootopia. Oh, yeah. So there you go. I was going to cut the chit-chat. That's right. And I'm going to segue us into my conversation with Tommy, where we'll get into some more draft talk about what we're going to do with our draft pick, what the timing is going to look like if we trade it, and all that jazz. So catch us on the turn. Leonardo DiCaprio, congratulations on winning your first Oscar, baby. You beat the bear.
Where's the shark? She's in your mind.
Alrighty, I'm here with Tommy. Tommy's in the car again. This is another drive-in podcast. Tommy, how you doing?
I'm doing well, man. Going to the game tomorrow.
Oh, sweet.
So I'm looking forward to that.
Nice, man.
But yeah.
We're doing another drive-in podcast, and I think we're going to be more often be doing this from your car, drive-in home and stuff because of our crazy schedule. I think at some point we're going to have a car sponsor come on board because yeah. I was going to say, you know, what kind of car do you drive? But I don't even want to name it yet because hopefully they come on board and sponsor us. So, hey, if you're a car dealership and want to sponsor a Lakers podcast, here you go. Now's your chance. I'm sure they'll be knocking on our doors anytime now.
Exactly.
With that said, did you catch the Steph Curry mania over the weekend? I didn't actually watch the game, but
I did catch the game. I didn't watch it live.
I didn't either.
So I had it recorded because I had a feeling. I mean, OKC and OKC matches up really well with Golden State. So I had a feeling it'd be a pretty good game. I mean, I still expected Golden State to win by like 15 or points or something, but
yeah, you didn't think it would be the game of the century.
Exactly. So basically I was like skimming in the beginning and I was like, all right, if it stays close, I'll pay closer attention. And it was just like Oklahoma was playing so well the entire time. I was like, God, I have to like actually watch this. I feel like
seriously.
And yeah, it ended up being like one of the most epic regular season games I think I've probably ever seen.
I mean, nobody even mentions the fact that Kevin Durant had 7 threes and, you know, had an incredible game
too. Yeah.
Because, and I think OKC was like handily up for a little bit in the first
half.
Much of that game. And it was just Steph Curry's brilliance pretty much that, catapulted the Warriors to the win.
There were just, there were like a lot of ridiculous lines. Draymond Green didn't score, but he had like 14 rebounds, 14 assists, like
six, some crazy
like 6 steals and 4 blocks or something stupid like that.
Yeah, I think it was like one of the most incredible like stat lines without scoring a field goal, like in NBA history or something like that. It was just ridiculous. And Steph Curry shooting 12 for 16 from the 3-point line.
Oh my God.
I mean, those threes he was hitting, especially the half court one that he hit, which is incredible, but there was that one shot where he shot it right over Steven Adams' like outstretched fingers and he just drained it. It was just ridiculous. I think there was a meme going on afterwards where people were like, you know, 2K needs to give me my money back because I can't do this crap in the video game. And I'm trying to shoot half court shots in the video game, but I'm not hitting it. You know, Steph Curry does it in the real game. Why isn't it happening in the video game? Which is sadly very true. You know, 2K is not accurate because if you're shooting from 35 feet in the video game, you should be hitting it at a 50% rate, just like Steph Curry is. So it's incredible, man. And what do you think about the stupid light up 3-point line? It like adds nothing to the game.
No, it's completely ridiculous. And I don't know why they're doing that now.
If they want to add something, they should like have like the basket explode every time Steph Curry hits a three.
Exactly,
or something. Because that's what it feels like is happening every time he shoots something. So that was an incredible game on a random Saturday night, which usually doesn't happen.
Yeah.
But I guess let's get into what we wanted to talk about today outside of the Lakers game and last few Lakers games. Last week we had a conversation about what to do with our, you know, draft pick in case we keep it. And luckily for us, over the weekend, some stuff happened pertaining to us as well with the Brooklyn Nets winning again.
Thank God.
And the Phoenix Suns, most importantly, winning, because that's the team that we need to be most wary of because they are very obviously trying to tank. And
we just need them
to
win like three games.
Yeah,
or,
exactly.
Honestly, if they just win like two more games from now on,
we might be good. Yeah. And that we might be good even if we beat them two more times, because we have two matchups against them coming up, one at Staples and one in Phoenix. Yeah. So I think we're both anticipating that we're going to win those games. So we need Phoenix to maybe win two other games outside of that to give us enough leeway there. If we can somehow split those games, then I think we got it in the bag. But I think right now it's best that we anticipate that we win.
Yeah.
For obvious reasons, and we'll get into it later about what the Lakers are trying to do with their current roster right now to close the season. But before we get to that, like we were talking about the draft pick, right now we're in a good place. Phoenix won, Brooklyn won. Phoenix has 15 wins, Brooklyn has 17 wins, and we're stuck at 11 right now, and we're stuck on an 8-game losing streak. So right now, given the fact that we're probably going to keep our pick, last week we were talking about what to do with that, and we were mentioning the possibility of if we drop to number 3, we might trade it, and at this point, even if we keep the pick at number 1, number 2, we still might trade it, you know, because we're entering a very crucial time with free agency coming up in the summer and us having a whole ton of cap space and Kevin Durant being the main free agent that we want to get. And usually when stuff like this happens, you usually go all in on certain players if you can get other players to come on board. And last week we brought up the idea of, you know, trading a couple of assets for a guy like Jimmy Butler, who would be a superstar player that would possibly be the start of, you know, maybe Kevin Durant signing on or something like that. And then you also brought up the possibility of if Kevin Durant signs, even more so, we'd probably ship off assets to probably get someone like Russell Westbrook, right?
Right.
Or another example would be Blake Griffin, right? At that point, if you get someone to sign on board, you just give away as many assets as you can to get Blake Griffin, Russell Westbrook, and have a ready-made team to compete, which is what the Lakers are trying to do. So I guess we wanted to delve a little bit more into that notion and just kind of go through NBA history a little to unpack this and see what other teams have done. I think at the end of the day, we should note that nothing like this has ever happened in Lakers history where we have so much cap space,
right,
and we also have so many assets. So for us to predict exactly what's going to happen is probably, you know, folly, because it's probably, we're not going to be able to correctly predict this, but we can try and, you know, figure out what the rationale might be. So I think last week, my sort of thinking going into this is, I think there are one of two ways that the Lakers could go about this, right? On the one hand, during draft night, or even shortly after draft night, they may just go ahead and, even before anybody signs, they may go ahead and trade some assets for a guy like Jimmy Butler. And my rationale there is probably Jimmy Butler is going to be an attractive guy to already have on board for free agents to look at, whether that be Al Horford and Kevin Durant saying, oh, hey, Jimmy Butler's already there. Let's both go and make a super team, you know? So on that end, already having a guy like Jimmy Butler would be, you know, a good idea. So in that sense, you'd already trade Ben Simmons, Jordan Clarkson, Julius Randle, or something like that. Two of the three, three of the three, whatever. So I think that could be a possibility. Obviously, the other possibility is what you said. And, like, let's say Kevin Durant knows we kept our pick, and someone like Kevin Durant comes on board. And at that point, Kevin's like, hey, trade our pick and trade some other guys, Clarkson, Randle, for Russell Westbrook, because OKC is probably not going to get a better deal than that. And they probably know Westbrook's going to leave in 2017. So I guess for you first, can you kind of explain your rationale on thinking that on that kind of angle, I guess?
Yeah, so I think they're definitely... It's like you said, there's sort of two ways that it could happen. I am of the belief that it probably wouldn't be the first one. In other words, to the extent we execute some sort of trade like this, I don't think it would be on draft night like the Boston Celtics did that one year. And the,
right. So to do you want to quickly detail the Boston?
Yeah, trade? Yeah. So the Boston trade, for whoever doesn't remember, when Oklahoma City was still the Supersonics. When Oklahoma City was still the Seattle Supersonics, they knew they were about to move, not the following year, but the 2 years after, and they knew that it was time to rebuild. They got bounced, I think, in the first or second round of the playoffs, and they started unloading guys. So one of the guys they unloaded was Ray Allen, and they traded him on draft night to the Boston Celtics. Like, I think it was straight up for the number five overall pick.
For Ray Allen, pretty much.
So it ended up being Jeff Green, which I guess in hindsight, that wasn't that great of a trade. But at the time, it was number five overall for Ray Allen straight up. And, you know,
and Ray Allen at the time was like a legitimate all-star.
The previous season, Ray Allen averaged 26 points per game. This wasn't like the Ray Allen that you know from Boston and Miami days. He was a legit all-star. He was 30 years old at the time of the trade, so he was like right in his prime.
And quickly from Boston's end, sorry to cut in, Boston the previous year was a legitimate lotto team. Like, all they had was Paul Pierce, and so they needed to shake things up. But what they did have was a bunch of assets, you know? So I think there were previous rumors of them trying to trade for Kevin Garnett.
Right.
But Kevin Garnett wasn't going to come and agree to that trade unless they had more than just Paul Pierce.
Right.
So obviously they made that trade for Ray Allen, and then after that Kevin Garnett was like, all right, bring me on board, and then they trade Al Jefferson and a whole bunch of assets for Kevin Garnett. So that's kind of the catalyst where it's the draft trade that allows for all these other dominoes to fall. So.
Right, and just now that we're talking about this, just go on a semi-tangent for a few seconds. So one thing people don't really remember about that trade also is that the Boston Celtics, like, severely tanked that year because they were trying to get a top pick because they wanted Greg Oden. They wanted Kevin Durant. And what happened was they ended up with, like, the second worst record in the NBA because they shut down Paul Pierce and they fell to number five because, like, every team that was in the top, like, there was all kinds of shuffling that happened in the top three.
Yeah.
And so
that can't happen to us. Hopefully that doesn't happen.
So what happened there was, you're right. They ended up trading that pick for Ray Allen, and then everything else fell from there. Then they ended up trading like a package of like four young assets for Kevin Garnett. And obviously the rest is history. But so the reason I don't think something like that would happen here is because, with the exception of DeMarcus Cousins, I can't really think of a team who has an all-star. And, like, we would probably be looking for, like, not like a young, it doesn't necessarily have to be, like, a 24, 25-year-old guy, but even, like, a team with, like, a 30-ish-year-old all-star, I can't really see a team out there that on draft night would be willing to trade that guy, even for, like, Ben Simmons straight up. The Jimmy Butler thing you bring up, I think the Bulls might, like, consider trading Jimmy Butler, but they would only do so if they strike out in free agency themselves. Like, they're going to lose Pau Gasol. They're going to lose they could potentially lose Pau Gasol. They could potentially lose Joakim Noah. If they lose both of those guys and they get no one back, then maybe they're like, okay, let's just blow it up.
So I guess I'll give you a team that could definitely do it, but I don't know if I'd want to do it. So if the Memphis Grizzlies offered us Marc Gasol.
Right. So like, there you go. Like Memphis is like another example, but I don't know if we would trade a top five or top three pick for Marc Gasol.
If I knew that he wasn't getting so injury prone, I'd maybe say yes, but it's tough.
He's like a big guy. I think he's like 31. So like, you know, that unfortunately for big guys, it's like, unless you're a crazy athlete, after you turn 30, 31 years old, you start your decline. And, you know, he still has a couple of solid years in them. I'm not going to say he sucks or anything, but it's definitely not worth trading that high of a pick, especially in like a top loaded draft like this. I do think it's more likely that something happens where we end up part of our pitch to Durant and part of Durant's, like, whether or not he decides to accept, very well could be based on whether we keep that pick, not for the player, but for the fact that we could tell Durant, look at this, we're going to sign you and we have a deal currently lined up with Team X to trade Ben Simmons for an established star. And after the trade, we're going to still have enough cap space to sign another max player and still have some cap space left over after that, right? Because Ben Simmons' salary is going to cancel out, like, not cancel out, but it'll be like a decent chunk of whoever we trade him for.
Yeah. It would be around like $5 million.
It would be about $5 million, assuming we got the number one pick. So I think that's definitely likely. Stuff like that has happened. I think another one we talked about was
the Kevin Love trade
just like very recently, 2 years ago, happened like this, where they signed
LeBron signed.
And I can't help but think that they did it under the, like, LeBron sort of was in the know about what was going on, right? And look, you can drop all these conspiracy theories. Like, he wrote that letter and called out all these teammates that, like, I want to help so-and-so get better. I want to watch so-and-so develop. And, like, randomly, he specifically didn't mention Anthony Bennett and Andrew Wiggins.
Andrew Wiggins, yeah.
Which is really weird, considering Andrew Wiggins was, like, known coming out of high school as being, like, the next LeBron. I mean, it turns out he is not that level, but... or at least not yet. But it's really interesting that LeBron, like, mentions all these other dudes and then specifically didn't mention Wiggins in that letter. Right. So,
I mean, his excuse was that he didn't know who Wiggins was. But at the same time, you should know that your organization just
got the number one pick, dude. He knew who Wiggins was. Come on. So
exactly.
LeBron is like, anyway, I'm not going to get into that. But I think there was something like, everybody knew Minnesota was trying to move Love for a good package anyway, and it wouldn't shock me if part of Cleveland's pitch to LeBron was, hey, it's not going to be, you're coming into like a rebuilding team. We already have Kyrie Irving. We have you. And although we have no other cap space, we can trade our number one pick Wiggins for a guy like Kevin Love. Like, especially if Love pushes a little bit, there's going to be no way that Minnesota gets a better offer for Kevin Love than Andrew Wiggins and a couple of future firsts.
Right. So I think like the main point here is that things like this usually happen after draft day for the sole reason that teams just have more of an outline of what they want to do. All the options are out there. All the options are gone for some teams. And, you just have a better idea of what you can or can't do, and the risk is less, pretty much, is what you're saying. And I think for either of these scenarios, whether you do the trade on draft night or do the trade after draft night after a free agent has already signed, I think the main point to keep in mind is that it's usually contingent on something else happening.
Right.
So even for my scenario where it happened on draft day, they already knew that they were also going to trade for Kevin Garnett. He just needed to see that something else was going on.
Right.
You know? So for the Lakers, if they did a draft day trade for like Jimmy Butler or Blake Griffin or any of these guys, they would already even sort of have to know that they had a good chance at signing a free agent that would be enticed by that idea of playing with Jimmy Butler. And then even more so for your scenario where it happens after the draft and even happens after we've signed a big free agent. Obviously, you know, you're already selling that free agent. Hey, we'll make a big swing here once you sign to bring on someone else on board. Plus, we have another max space offer to sign someone else. So everything's going to be contingent on a lot of things. But I think also what makes this rare, and I think what is kind of similar to the Boston scenario, is I think, like, again, we're entering some uncharted territory where we've never had so many assets and so much cap space, where I agree with you, it's much more likely that this stuff happens after draft day, once someone has signed or once the smoke clears. But I think I give a little bit higher percentage chance on this happening draft day, more so than recent years, just because of we have three max slots we can essentially use, you know? So even if you trade for Jimmy Butler, you don't necessarily have to have something set in stone, because, you know, wow, I have Jimmy Butler, I'm definitely going to sign at least one more star, probably two now in the offseason, because he's already my pitching tool, you know what I mean? So, I mean, that's another thing to keep in mind. But I do agree with you that it's much more likely that things sort themselves out afterwards, because you're risking a lot less. Because
exactly,
I think on draft day, you're going to have to kind of probably shell out more than you would have otherwise.
Yes.
In terms of assets, where, hey, if they come to us, if Chicago comes to us on draft day and says, we'll give you Jimmy Butler for the number one pick straight up, we would do that no matter what, contingent on nothing, you know?
Right.
But likely as it is now, they're probably going to say, hey, we'll give you Jimmy Butler for, give us your number one pick, give us Jordan Clarkson, and maybe give us Julius Randle or Larry Nance, you know?
Right.
So we'd have to probably give up that much, and we'd have to make a big decision on that end. Whereas, let's say that even that crazy offer was given to us after we've already signed Kevin Durant or someone of that caliber.
Right.
We'd just give up those assets anyways, you know?
Yeah.
But we wouldn't give up all those assets without knowing that we'd have Kevin Durant in the bag.
Exactly,
you know what I'm saying?
Exactly.
So in that sense, I do agree with you. There's a lot less speculation and risk involved if you know after the draft what you have to work with, what other teams have to work with, and all of that. And so, yeah, that's pretty much our, you know, what we're thinking in terms of whether a draft can be pulled off with our pick. But I think more and more so, we're both in the line of thinking that we are going to trade the pick. It just seems like the most logical thing to do if the team wants to get contending really quickly, as fast as possible.
Exactly. Yeah.
And I don't necessarily think people have to worry about us overselling or selling the farm, because I think no matter what, we're going to get whoever we get back, it's going to be a legitimate superstar. I mean, Mitch knows what he's doing.
He does. And when you have the number one pick in a draft like this, where you're, and again, maybe we're obviously assuming a lot, like we're assuming we end up with the number one pick, but in a draft like this, where you're potentially getting a guy like Ben Simmons in return, who's so hyped and like has shown through like nearly a full college season that he can legitimately play. I mean, for all the criticisms we've given him, he's a legit NBA player. Like, we haven't seen that many prospects like Simmons. So when you have the number one pick like that in this kind of draft, I don't want to say it's like Anthony Davis level, but it's up there. Like, this has got to be one of the most valuable number one picks in recent years. I'd even say more so than last year, because although Karl Towns ended up being a complete beast, like one of the, you know, probably like, I think we were saying that like the best number one pick drafted since LeBron, but at the time it wasn't that clear that he was going to be this good. Right. So,
yeah. Yeah, and I mean, not to compare, because you can't really compare drafts and what happens trade-wise between the years, because everything's contextual, but you'd assume if, like, the number five pick can get you someone like Ray Allen, even though he was probably towards the end of his career, with the number one pick, you could probably legitimately get a superstar.
Oh, yeah, no, so, for sure, I think.
Pretty much all the guys we're talking about. And to quickly segue into, well, not an actual trade, but to kind of go deeper into your outlandish Kevin Durant signs and Westbrook comes here via trade or through free agency, do you want to share with the people here? We're not saying that Tommy has a source or whatever.
Right.
In fact, I'll just lay it out to you right now. Tommy goes to a Lakers forum. We won't name what the forum is. That's has like a secret forum within the forum with actual people who have, you know, broken stuff before. Not broken stuff, but broke news before, and they've actually been legitimate because they do have actual sources of their own. So, Tommy, do you want to take it away on this end?
Yeah, so, I mean, again, I don't want to be one of these, like, oh, my God, sources, but...
Chris Broussard, let it happen.
Yeah, no, I don't have any sources. I have no idea whether this is verifiable information. I just read this online, full disclosure.
So take this all with a grain of salt,
but
grain of pepper, a grain of sugar. Go ahead.
Basically, on this forum that I frequent, there is a guy on there who has been, I want to say he's been vetted by the mods. And so basically this guy is, as far as I know, and again, it's the internet, so God knows, but as far as I know, and as far as the mods can tell, he is an actual real life friend of Russell Westbrook. And through that connection, he's been able to, he's said some things that, like, you wouldn't, nobody would know unless they actually knew Russell Westbrook, right? So he made some posts the other day and was like, basically around the holidays, I think he was talking to Westbrook, or he had heard from sources associated with Westbrook, who obviously is associated with Durant, that apparently my crazy psycho theory about Durant Westbrook is not that crazy, because look, it's like I said, these guys are really good friends. They really like each other. And I think they sort of see that the writing is on the wall in Oklahoma City, and they both want out, but I think that they don't necessarily want to break apart from each other, which is weird because that's never really happened before. Like, typically when guys want out, they just want out and, like, okay, you know what? It's been a good run, but let's go do our own thing now. Or, like, one of them will stay, one of them will leave, or they'll both leave for different teams. All that stuff has happened. I don't think I can remember in NBA history, I mean, at least as far as I've been watching, where two guys from the same team left and joined a different team.
In their primes.
Like, that's, I don't think that's ever happened. So basically what this guy said is Durant has a short list that's relatively known from amongst people who are, like, in his circle. And that list includes the Lakers, the Clippers, the Rockets, and the Warriors. And the Lakers are towards the end. And all of these teams, I think, except for the Clippers, I've heard Durant linked to from other sources. So basically, there's a strong sense that this guy had, based on the people he's talked to, that part of Kevin Durant's decision about where he wants to go might hinge on who has the capacity to get Russell Westbrook, be it in 2017 or when Westbrook becomes a free agent himself, or immediately via trade. Apparently, it could help the Lakers. This is not, now I'm going off based off what I read, this is not what the guy said, but it seems like it could help the Lakers more than I thought, to, if they could pitch as part of their pitch to Kevin Durant, say, not only can we sign you, but because we have all these assets, we can immediately make a trade for Russell Westbrook. And you guys can decide amongst yourselves whether you want to just wait for Westbrook in 2017 or whether you want us to trade, like, our number one or two pick plus, like, Clarkson or whoever for Westbrook right now. But we have the capacity to do both. And not only can we do that, we can also sign, like, another max dude.
Yeah.
So that's going to be the thing. And another thing he said was Durant wants say in the in who the coach is. And
oh, please.
Right. This is,
so Byron Scott's not going to be there.
This is a thing that people have speculated about before, right? Like, in other contexts, like, oh, maybe it's possible that a superstar player would want to have some say in the coach. And apparently here, this guy seems to think that that's true. It seems like his sense was that the two front runners for a team to be able to land Durant would be a team that can show that they're willing to hire either Luke Walton because he likes that Golden State system,
yeah,
or Scottie Brooks because he really loves Scottie Brooks and
the white Byron Scott.
Yeah. Which, I mean, like, if you're getting Durant, I don't give a shit. Fine,
sure, fine, whatever.
But yeah, so that's the sense that this guy got. Those are going to be the two big factors in changing the order of Durant's list. It's going to be who can show him that, like, we can sign Westbrook or trade for Westbrook right away, and who can show him that, like, we can get you the coach that you want, be it Luke Walton or be it Scotty Brooks. And I think, look, at some level, like we always talk about, all these things are linked. Maybe in a vacuum, we're not like the clear front-running favorites to get Luke Walton. If we all of a sudden tell Luke Walton, hey, we have Kevin Durant lined up, and once we execute that, we have Russell Westbrook, like, pushing to try to get out of OKC, and we have the assets to pull off that trade, and Kevin Durant specifically wants you to be the coach. Like, at some level, all this stuff becomes, like more and more obvious. You know what I mean? So it's interesting and not surprising that the Lakers are not towards the top of the list right now, but there are things that could very feasibly happen, largely revolving around us retaining our pick, that could project us, like, to the top very quickly. Yeah. This guy's sense was that OKC is not even in the picture unless they make a deep run in the playoffs, meaning Western Conference Finals or Finals.
Right. So obviously this is contingent upon us keeping the pick, number one. This is the most important one. Us keeping the pick, widening our options, and then obviously number two, making sure Byron Scott is not the coach when free agency signs. So those are the two things to look out for. Look, if Byron Scott's still the coach, I don't know what the hell we're doing, and we're off the deep end pretty much. But if you see those two things happening, then, you know, anything happens at that point. I'd almost say if we were an East Coast team, we'd have it in the bag, you know, because that's like the last remaining thing. We're out of Golden State's way. Kevin Durant would surely sign or something like that.
Right.
But even with that, like I've been pointing to so for so long, for so much of this podcast, it's we're in such uncharted territory with the Lakers where we really don't know what could happen. You know,
yes,
it could be something totally huge that we've never seen before, because we've never had this position of having so much cap space and so many assets to, like, utilize. So obviously, even if Let's say the Westbrook thing, Kevin Durant may not even be as adamant about trading for Westbrook now. Let's say the Lakers are like, hey, Kevin, come back, and they try and talk to OKC, and OKC's asking for too much. The Lakers might go back to Kevin and say, hey, Kevin, you know, they're asking a bit too much for Westbrook right now. Let's just trade these assets for Jimmy Butler, and then we'll just tell Westbrook to come next year during the summer, you know?
Right.
So there's like a lot of different options here. It's not only like Kevin Durant signs, and then he says, you have to trade for Westbrook, or, you know, something like that. All that matters is there's a lot of things that are, like you said, linked together, and a lot of things that could be contingent. And if all things line up correctly, who knows what happens.
Right. And then you get down these, like, not to go too far down all, like, these ridiculous rabbit holes, right? But
we've gone very far down.
Right. But, you know, even further at some level, you're like, it's sort of like what I speculated about on the last podcast, which is once you get Durant and Westbrook is stuck in OKC by himself, who knows what his mindset is going to become. Like, I think it's been widely reported that Westbrook wants to come to LA, be it the Lakers or Clippers. His goal after he signed his last extension with OKC was, let's see what happens here, but ultimately I want to come back to Los Angeles. He's from LA and this is where he wants to be. So if Durant suddenly decides I'm done with OKC, Westbrook might just internally start putting some pressure on the Thunder. And when you have already lost Kevin Durant and Westbrook is straight up telling you, if you don't trade me, I'm going to just FYI, I'm going to walk. Like, I'll gladly put 110% effort into this 2016 season, but I just want you to know that I'm going to walk after this year. When somebody says something like that to you, OKC has always been sort of ahead of the curve, right? Like, they traded Harden before he was going to become a free agent. It wouldn't really surprise me that much if they were like, well, crap, you know, it was a good run. When did they make the finals? Like 2010?
Yeah.
Or something like
2010
that?
2010 or 2011 or 12, something like
something
that.
Like that, right? So it's been like, they had that, like, very dramatic rise, and then they were in the finals very quickly, and it's been, like, years since then. They've had, like, a while to put something together is the point here.
Yeah.
So at some point, they might just be like, we just lost our best player, and Westbrook is very good, but he's saying he's going to walk, and the Lakers are offering us Ben Simmons. So if it could come down to like the Lakers, Kevin Durant and Westbrook just like talking to each other and just being like, okay, I mean, I'm Westbrook. I'm just going to tell the FO, like, this is what's going to happen. I'm going to leave. You could trade me, but like, look, I'm not going to commit to signing an extension with any team unless you trade me to the Lakers. If you trade me to the Lakers, I'd sign an extension with them. Sort of like the Kevin Love situation. You know, we throw a lot of like, oh, is the number one pick for Russell Westbrook enough? But okay, on paper, just like straight up in a vacuum, obviously not, right? It's never enough, yeah. Because with Westbrook, you know, you have a superstar already. And you don't have this risk in like, what's the number one pick going to become? Is he going to develop, et cetera, et cetera. But it becomes wildly different when you have a guy who's like telling you, you're not going to get full value for Westbrook if he's saying to teams, I'm not going to sign an extension with you, right?
Yeah, no other team is going to pony up for that, a one-year rental for Westbrook. The only team that's going to pony up is going to be the team that knows Westbrook's going to sign with them, and that's the Lakers.
Exactly, and then it becomes like an interesting balancing act of the Lakers at that point would know they have the leverage, you know what I mean? So they're not going to trade four assets to get Russell Westbrook if they're the only team that he would sign an extension with. So then it just becomes a matter of how can we make something fair out of this? And
I think they draw the line at two assets. So it's Ben Simmons and Jordan Clarkson, or Ben Simmons and Randall for Russell Westbrook. And there you go. If you want more, then we'll just wait for Westbrook.
I agree. You know, you can say that. 100% agree with that. So, I mean, I don't think it's that far fetched. Is it unlikely? Obviously, but you can see a path to where this could happen. And I mean, so yeah, we just need to hope that we keep on, keep the pick, because that's going to make a huge difference in our chances.
And to even just like, not even a path to specifically this, but like we've, you know, alluded to before, just a path to something big and unexpected happening like this. So,
right. You
know, just keep your, stay woke, as they say, keep your eyes peeled, you know, don't go taking this rumor and then posting it on some other forum and be like, hey dude, these podcast dudes said we're getting Westbrook and Durant. Right. And like, totally don't do that, please. Like, we don't have sources. We also don't want people to totally say, I'm not listening to that stupid podcast. Look at what they're saying. You know, we're just literally just throwing stuff out there, and we're giving you a reasonable rationale of how it could happen. And
yeah,
it's actually legitimate, you know, so.
And we fully acknowledge that this is most likely not going to happen, right?
It's not like, for sure.
Yeah, we're not going to pull a Stephen A and be, although Steve, I get to give Stephen A credit, I think he called like 2 months ago that both of them would end up in LA, and
hey, maybe he knows.
Yeah, no, I mean, unless he might, right?
Unless Stephen A's that guy on that forum writing, so
true. So yeah, I mean, who knows?
So yeah, exactly. So, you know, with that said, take that for what you will, and keep it to yourself, and if it happens, come back to this podcast and tell everybody that we broke it first. But until that happens, just stay quiet about
yeah.
it. Stay quiet about it. With that said, we'll end this segment, and
Well, whoever she is, tell her thanks.
Whoever she is, tell her I said thanks.
Wow, that was my acting debut, Young and the Restless.
Alrighty, we are back, and we're going to quickly talk about the Lakers' last two games, what we've seen, and just what's going on with the roster, because I think some things have happened recently that are kind of actually new, like in terms of a new set that the Lakers are implementing after, you know, literally more than half the season's done. Byron Scott is implementing new sets. And, you know, at the time when we heard it, we're like, oh my God, this coach is so ridiculous. All of a sudden he's implementing this crap. But I think you have more news on that end in terms of why they're implementing it and also who exactly is implementing this system. So Tommy, take it away.
Yeah. So the Lakers have been trying to incorporate some new sets. And I say sets in the sense of this is not just like, oh, they have a couple new plays. It's like legitimate real NBA sets where like you have options and there are things to do. It's not just like make this ISO. Pass, then make this pass, then ISO. You know what I mean? It's
exactly,
it's actual sets with options. And it seems like what they're trying to do is sort of get these players in they're trying to use this second half of the season to sort of get these players in the mindset of learning a real motion offense. We've been calling for this for a long time, but you're not going to win crap in the NBA nowadays unless you're running some sort of system offense. You know, the one-on-one, right. like, you have the Miami Big Three, who, even when the Miami Big Three, like, their first year, and they were just ISOing all day, they didn't win anything. It wasn't until they started implementing, like, a real offense that they won something. So what the Lakers have done is they've started to implement the motion weak offense, which is a set that the Spurs use. They rely on it heavily. Golden State relies on it heavily. To be honest, most teams, from what I can tell, use it in some instances, but in particular, those two teams use it a lot. And apparently, I wasn't aware of this, but apparently they ran this a couple of times in the preseason and completely went away from it for like 60 games and then just recently started doing it again. And I don't know why this happened. However, I think it's safe to say that with all these meetings that we heard about between Byron and Mitch that occurred around the All-Star break, it would not surprise me if Mitch told Byron, this is the direction we see the team going to get there. These are the types of sets these guys need to be learning and like thinking about. And it just went from there, because I highly doubt that Byron just like woke up one day and was like, actually, now I've decided to teach them a real offense. You know what I mean? And it's like,
also because he probably doesn't have it in his notebook to begin with or whatever.
Exactly. So this sort of fits with, you know, whoever the Lakers choose to be their next coach, especially if they choose Luke Walton and Luke Walton agrees to do it. This is like one set that's going to be like an example of like the type of offense that he's going to want to run. This modern, like constant movement, constant passing, like that's the kind of stuff we want to see. And so, yeah, I mean, they've implemented it the last few games and they've been using it a lot more, and not surprisingly, the offense has looked quite a bit better. I mean, you can attribute that also to the fact that we're playing our good players now, like Randall starting and Clarkson, and sorry, Russell starting too.
Yeah, we're actually starting a point guard. So
we're only playing Roy Hibbert like 15 minutes per game. But so like there's other factors at play here too. But if you watch the way that these guys move around, there appears to be some sort of purpose in their movements. It's not mindlessly, you know, haphazardly throw the ball to one guy and then the guard runs around like these weak ass screens. He gets no separation from his man because his man could see exactly where he's going. And, you know, we end up with like taking 8 seconds off the clock to move the ball like 3 feet or something.
Right. And I think you mentioned that this type of offense with a little bit more motion going on both sides of the court is actually fitted more for D'Angelo's skill set. Is that correct?
Yeah. So D'Angelo is going to thrive in this offense. I think one thing that's weird about D'Angelo is for his age, he's really really good at making fast decisions. I think his problem comes when he has to create something out of nothing. Which, I mean, look, obviously, like, oh, what a, you know, crazy statement. You know, obviously that's hard for everybody. But the problem is the offense we were running before, he had to do that on, like, every play because there was nothing going on. Yeah. But when it comes to just, like, making really fast decisions, the reason he excels at it is because he sees things before they happen, right? So the reason he makes all these anticipation assists, which we saw in college and which we saw flashes of, is because he sees things like 2 steps in advance. So a motion offense like this, where there's so many options and counters, and it's like a whole offensive scheme as opposed to just a few plays. That system is really tailored to D'Angelo's skills because he has like the really high basketball IQ and can see everything before it actually happens on the floor.
And he has the ability to pinpoint the exact guys and make the right passes where in ways that, you know, the defending team isn't able to see it.
Right.
So I definitely agree with you there. And to kind of get into, you know, the last two games, which are both against the Grizzlies, ironically enough, I don't know if you remember that. So the last game against Grizzlies where we got blown out at home pretty much was atrocious on every level, besides pretty much Julius Randle, who had 17 and 7, and D'Angelo Russell, who had 22, 3 and 3. So The play that stood out to me the most was that play in transition between Russell and Randle, actually. I don't even remember this, but it was on fast break, and Russell's in the middle of the court, and Randle's running on the left corner going baseline, and then Russell actually nutmegs Zach Randolph. He bounce passes the ball right in between Randolph's legs, right to Randle for the baseline dunk. Yeah. So you couldn't actually see it on the screen, and I didn't see it until after the fact, but he actually, in transition, just totally nutmegs Zach Randolph to Randle for the dunk. So that was like a really awesome and fun play to see. And that was pretty much the only highlight out of that game because, you know, as we suspected, Clarkson was inevitably going to come down from his like 55% three-point shooting.
Right.
And he kind of came down in a big way, 0 for 7 from threes, but, you know, he just had an off night. We'll give him that. But the most impressive thing about that Grizzlies game, and probably we're seeing maybe a little bit of implementation of this new system, was D'Angelo being aggressive and being able to run the offense for himself and other people. You know, he had 22 points. He only had 3 assists, but he also only had 1 turnover, and the rest of the game was pretty much a blowout. So I think there's definitely some stuff to look forward to here. Did you see anything out of the last two games of the Grizzlies that you wanted to point out?
No, nothing in particular. But like you said, you're starting to see who these guys can become, and it's pretty scary. I mean, Clarkson, he was due for a bad game.
But the game before that, he had 6 for 11 from threes.
Yeah, he was amazing. Yeah. So, you know, it's everybody has it. I mean, Steph Curry, for God's sake, has probably shot 2 for 11 at some point, even this season. You know what I mean? So.
No, he hasn't.
I'm pretty sure he has. Well, you know, which is the thing. Right, so it's Clarkson is going to, everyone, when you're a shooter and you're taking that many shots from outside, you're going to have games like that. And that's fine. You live with it. You're just looking for overall averages. But you're starting to see the danger of these other guys, right? Like D'Angelo Russell is just going to become, once he develops, like, I don't even really know, because his release is so fast right now that it's really about fine tuning his accuracy.
Yeah.
It's going to be impossible, I feel like, to guard this guy. He flips up his shots with, like, you know, he barely needs any space to do it. He barely needs any time because his release is so fast. I'm like,
yeah, I think that's been the most impressive part. Like you're just talking about, he, you know, the threes he takes where he is like, there's a guy right in front of him. There's no screen. And he just dribbles into the three right over them. I didn't think he was able to do that, but he's been able to do it recently. So
yeah, the thing is he's big. So guys who are defending him are typically smaller. He's got a 6'10" wingspan and his release is so fast that when you couple all these factors, it's like, you've seen that a couple times in the last few games where the clock was running down and he noticed it and he just did like a little hesitation dribble to get himself like a foot of space. And just by the time the shot's up, the guy can't even react. You know what I mean? So yeah,
definitely.
So that's going to be really insane. Like Randle, I don't know what the hell happened to him, but somebody taught him how to dive to the rim finally.
and just dunk
instead of like throwing up these weird, like spinning layups. So sure. You're starting to see like what kind of player he can become. Like John Barry's, I don't know if you were watching like the ESPN coverage, but John Barry's been like gushing about Randle's play.
Nice.
And the fact that he can, you know, when he faces up against his man, like nobody can guard him. I'm talking about like Draymond Green, like,
right.
I mean, maybe he can like try to stay in front of him, but you just think that like once this guy develops a jump shot, which I think Barry made some comment about how Randle is shooting 24% outside of the paint or something this year.
Woo-wee.
Which is insane. I mean, honestly, when I heard that stat, I'm amazed he's shooting like 42% from the field.
Right.
But if he can develop any semblance of a jumper, which given how his game has progressed so far, it would not shock me if he did.
Sure. I mean, just not to make this a straight parallel, but look at Zach Randolph. Like the fact that he has that small 15-foot jumper down pat, that's what's made him effective his entire career.
Right.
Can you imagine Randle with that? Because they're not the same player, but if he just added that jump shot that Zach Randolph has down pat, then he'll be able to use his quickness, he'll be able to use his spin moves and all that crafty stuff that he does to perfection.
Right, and Randle is going to be another type of guy who's just going to thrive in a motion offense, because when people are constantly, it's like when you know how when you watch the Warriors play, and the ball is just whipping around and the defense looks like they're on skates Like, even if they're able to stay in front of their guy relatively well, they're just, the defense is moving around so much. It's like crazy. And Randall thrives when he has his guy on skates already. You know what I mean? Yeah. So it's like, imagine situations where Randall's catching it, where he could take a 16 footer. His guy is completely off balance. He could just blow by that guy anyway. Like, it doesn't even matter if he has, obviously it's better if he has the jumper to force the guy to come out, but it's, you know, that's another thing that I think there's a lot of reason to be excited is what I'm getting at.
For sure.
And go ahead.
I think in a motion offense too, you just have more reason and motivation to run around and cut if you know that passes are going to be whizzing or you're going to get the ball, you know. Part of the reason that Randall probably doesn't roll is that the offense doesn't, you know, make that action happen enough times where he's actually motivated to do it even when he doesn't get the ball, you know. And in a motion offense, that's what's going to happen, you know. The ball's going to have energy, like, you know, D'Antoni said before, and people are going to be more motivated to make those cuts and whatnot. And quickly to, you know, go back to D'Angelo Russell, you're talking about his hesitation dribbles and being able to pull up. I think the other thing he does really well is he's able to, because of his dribble, hide behind screens very well. It's not like a normal thing where he literally just takes a screen, and because his dribble is so tight and because it's so crafty, he can literally just pull it back and take that three-point shot behind like a screen, even if it's just like a split second.
Right.
And I think that's something that he does really effectively. He's able to hit it on somebody, or he's able to really hide behind a screen really well and just get that shot. So, and it all comes from his ability to get people on their skates with his crafty dribble. You know, sometimes he's not the fastest player on the floor. Sometimes he's not as demonic as Westbrook or even Kyrie Irving. But the fact that he's able to yo-yo that ball at different speeds and keep a guy honest, that really opens up his jump shot. And as we've seen as well, he's used his hesitation dribble to get to the basket as well, which is what's been very positive.
And just to expand on one point you just made there, he has shown, I think his old man game, one thing that bothered me about that before during the course of the last, whatever, 60 games was, I just felt like, I know that he has a gear that he's not using, right? Because, like, you saw it in bursts, you saw it in college, and for whatever reason, everything in the NBA was walk it up, make a boring pass, like, everything looked super labored, and like he was moving at half speed. Ever since the All-Star game, from whatever, my speculation is the front office had some sort of directive for Byron, they've all been making a concerted effort to run the ball up the floor and get it across the line in 3 seconds. And you see D'Angelo like take this ball from under the basket and push it. And I mean, he's very fast. I mean, obviously you have John Wall, you have Russell Westbrook. Maybe he's not like them, but he's shown, like, to say that he, like, the old man thing was like, I'm not sure James Harden could push the ball like that. I'm not sure, you know, Andre Miller, when he was younger, could push the ball like that. Like, Russell can push the ball. The next step for him with that, I think, is going to be the quickness within the paint. Or, like, once he gets within the three-point line, show that same explosive and quick burst, which he's shown, I think, in flashes. But
yeah,
if he can do that, dude, I'm just like, who's going to be able to guard this guy? Like, imagine if he shoots 40% from three. He's going to be like a 25-point-per-game scorer or something.
For sure, for sure. And I think it's funny because the last two games have been against the Grizzlies, and I kind of made this point on our Twitter where I was talking about how it's funny that D'Angelo's playing against his, like, clone in Mike Conley, the slower, probably less flashy clone in Mike Conley. But that's pretty much the type of player you want D'Angelo to pick up a few things here and there from, because they kind of have the same sort of game. But I think Russell has the ability to score at much higher, you know, bursts and be able to really be more creative than Conley. But, you know, at the end of the day, if we end up with a much sexier, higher scoring version of Mike Conley, I don't think anybody would be disappointed with that. So it's just funny that he's been able to play against him. And, you know, the last two games, Conley has had really good games, but, you know, with the motion offense and the new offense being set up, D'Angelo has had one turnover. He's had 8 assists and 1 turnover in the first game, and then 3 assists, 1 turnover in the last game. So obviously something's happening here. I don't know if it's the system or it's just the confidence or him starting, but clearly something's going on that wasn't before, and the guys are learning, and hopefully the new motion stuff is helping them. You know, I'll be more keen to look for that kind of stuff in the next game, which you're going to be at tomorrow against the Brooklyn Nets. That's right.
Yay.
Exactly. So are you going to be rooting for them to win, or what's going on?
No, I mean, it's I always root for the Lakers to win, though. I've sort of, the way I keep myself going, rooting for them to win, despite the fact that we're trying to keep this pick, is that I sort of looked at the schedule and we have like 5 or 6 games that we're most likely going to win. And so I'm just going to, I shouldn't say most likely because we're the second worst team in the NBA, but right. That we have a legitimate shot at winning. So I'm going to root for them to win in those games anyway, because we've only won 2 games against teams over 500 the entire season. So
right.
We're probably not going to win those games anyway.
Yeah.
So like in the games that I think we're probably going to win, I feel like I might as well root for them.
Sure. And hopefully it'll give the guys the confidence that they need, so it doesn't seem so futile.
Exactly.
To them,
you know? So like you want to win at least like one game out of every 10 or something.
Right. You know what's going to happen, though, right? Because all the motion, new sets and stuff is really cool. But you know what our closing offense is going to be. It's going to be Byron Scott offense to get the win / loss.
Exactly. So
that's what they're going to use, that ISO Byron Scott offense. All right. With that said, Tommy, I'll let you go. That's pretty much our podcast. A lot of trade talk, a lot of draft talk, and then a few new tidbits here and there with what the Lakers are trying to implement and trying to close out the season with. And hopefully for all of our sakes, it's going to be a lot more fun to watch. And at the end of the day, we'll keep our pick. Kevin Durant, Russell Westbrook, Anthony Bennett, anybody?
Yeah.
What do you know? It's going to be an awesome offseason, everybody. With that said, we'll catch you guys later. Tommy.
Bye. Pushing and pulling and wishing that Messiah would be coming soon with his deliverance. I am the... Yo, everybody get up! Everybody get up! Everybody needs to understand that I'm more than simply a hype man for this rap group. Just like Geico is more than just a company that can save you money. Geico also has fast and friendly claim service, so they can help you when you need it most. And while I do love being a hype man, I also love reading for children's audiobooks. Like Little Bo Peep, she lost a sheep, and she don't know where to find them. Go! Geico. Expect great savings and a whole lot more.